from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, 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 what is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is about that time. 1 o'clock is rolled around here on this absolutely lovely hump day, Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. And you are tuned in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We've got a hot show in store for you today. My guest for today's show will be Gene Washington. That's right, former Michigan State wide receiver who played for the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos, also a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. I'll pick Gene's brain about, of course, his new project with his daughter Maya called Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. We actually had Maya on last week. Couldn't get Gene on, but we promised we would get Gene on this week, and we've got him, folks. He'll also weigh in on his playing career back here at Michigan State. We'll talk a little Deflategate with him. We'll talk about the dangers of today's football game and so much more, folks, so you don't want to miss that. We'll also, of course, engage in chatter on whether or not Mike Babcock will stay as the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings. So many conflicting reports out there right now. Nothing set in stone. We'll update you on that in just a sec. Also, Caleb Swanigan changing his commitment, heading to Purdue. The Pistons getting the 8th pick in the NBA draft lottery. All of that and so much more. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this May 20th. All right, and we begin with some exciting action at Rainey Park yesterday. Senior Lindsey Reed delivered the winning hit as top seed Holt captured its first softball classic title with a 6-5 extra innings victory over number 2 seed St. John's. How about that? Now, Reed's line drive single with two outs in the bottom of the 8th played it Ashley Louds from third base with the winning run for the Rams and set off a celebration. Just chaos on the field. The pitchers are absolutely magnificent. Now, Holt reached the championship game with a 16-0 mercy rule win over four-time defending champ Eden Rapids in Tuesday's first semifinal, while St. John's advanced with a 5-3 win over Lakewood in 8 innings. What a way to conclude the softball classic, though. Hats off again to the Holt High School softball squad. Fantastic stuff. All right, Michigan State's appeal to the Big Ten will allow linebacker Drake Martinez to play right away next year, folks. Mark D'Antonio was just simply ecstatic, tweeting to Martinez, quote, congrats on winning the appeal. 3-for-3. Special thanks to MSU Compliance and Big Ten Office. Hashtag look who's coming to dinner. How about that? Fantastic tweet from Coach D. Now, when Martinez signed on February 4th, Big Ten rule dictated that he would have to sit out the 2015 year and have 2 seasons of eligibility starting in 2016. That's because Martinez's younger brother of former Nebraska QB Taylor Martinez, he started his career with the Cornhuskers, which is another Big Ten school. All right, Purdue has its Mr. Basketball after all. Caleb Swanigan, the 2015 Indy Star Indiana Mr. Basketball, committed to the Boilermakers on Tuesday morning. That's according to, of course, Guardian Roosevelt Barnes. Now, Swanigan, ranked as a top 20 national prospect in his class, had originally committed to Michigan State in April. Barnes said the decision a second time around wasn't that difficult for the 6'9 Homestead star. We'll chat about that in just a sec. Will he stay or will he go? All indications were that Mike Babcock was deciding late Tuesday whether to remain head coach of the Detroit Red Wings or to end his 10-year run to accept a huge offer from the Buffalo Sabres. Babcock wrote in the text of the Detroit News, quote, I'll know in the morning. Babcock told ESPN.com that he'd make the decision this morning and then said, quote, but I'm still very much undecided. Now, of course, folks, it's 1 p.m. here on a Wednesday afternoon. The morning is all said and done, and I don't think we still have heard word from Mike Babcock on his future with the Detroit Red Wings. So we'll keep you updated if there's some breaking news throughout the hour. All right, the odds said the Detroit Pistons had a 72.4% of landing the eighth pick in next month's NBA draft. And the odds were right when the Pistons logo came up in the eighth slot at last night's NBA draft lottery in New York. Now, it's the sixth straight year that the Pistons have been in the lottery. And in three previous seasons, the team has dropped in the lottery, including last year's disastrous result that costed them their 2014 first-round pick. We'll chat about more about the lottery in just a sec. Detroit Tigers, they fell to the Milwaukee Brewers 8-1 yesterday at home. The Tigers have now lost three straight games. What began as a pitching duel between Anibal Sanchez and Jimmy Nelson became a Brewers runaway with three consecutive home runs in a nine-pitch span off Sanchez, sending Milwaukee to a second straight win over the Tigers. Now, Shane Green, who left his last start with Ulnar Luratis in his right arm. I probably just butchered that, right? He will get back on the mound Wednesday night, trying to end the Tigers' three-game losing streak. Green has tossed 13 innings of one-run ball over his past two starts, and Victor Martinez has also hit the disabled list, folks. In a move a month and a half in the making, the Tigers' designated hitter was placed on the 15-day disabled list with a left knee and inflammation. He will stay shelved for an undetermined period of time. Martinez is hitting .216 with one homer and 15 RBIs this year. In last night's NBA playoff action, the Golden State Warriors topped the Houston Rockets. And in a wild game last night in the NHL playoffs, the Chicago Blackhawks were able to even things against the Anaheim Ducks. Without further ado, folks, it is time to start the show.
Drums, please.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it, and think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the...
Yes, and that is how we begin today's Current Sports. Man, do I love that track or what? That's actually one of my favorite old school hip hop tracks of all time. Will Smith's Summertime. That's right. Will Smith just kind of a triple threat. I mean, he can act, he can rap. What else is it? I'm trying to think of something else he does. He doesn't sing a little bit, but he's a dual threat, I guess you can say. He can rap and act, okay? Will Smith, an uber talented guy. That's back during his rapping days. And I tell you what, that song always gets me in the mood for the summertime. And I don't know if you guys have been outside yet today, or maybe you came in early in the morning and it was a bit frosty outside, a bit cold this morning. But folks, right now it is absolutely gorgeous. About 65 degrees, the sun is out, the birds are chirping. I'm in a fantastic mood. Pretty busy day for us here at WKR, but busy is always good, right, folks? Before we begin things, I want to invite the man behind the glass, the engineer for WKR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Good, Al. I know it's a busy day for you. I've got a few things myself. Well, yesterday, and you know how hard this must be for myself being such a huge NBA fan.
Exactly.
I get back home, and there's no internet. And we don't have cable, so I have to rush over to the library, put it on one of the computers. And the library now closes at 10 p.m.
Wow.
For
so you couldn't see the game last night?
I couldn't see it.
No, get out of here. That is so unfortunate. Are you getting cable soon? And I couldn't live without cable because, of course, I mean, in our industry, having to watch sports and talk about it for a living, I mean, I have to catch games on my tube. Without cable, man, I would be lost, man. But are you getting it soon?
I'm trying to, yeah. I've been working on just my computer recently, streaming games off, watch ESPN, all of that stuff. So it works out decently well, but when you don't have internet, you can't do either of those.
I tell you what, technology runs the world now. I tell you that, folks, because without it, you know, you can't live without it, and most of the time you can't live with it, okay? Now, all right, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And you know, there were two fantastic games on last night when talking about the NBA and the NHL playoffs, Isaac. Of course, the Golden State Warriors topping the Houston Rockets in game one of the Western Conference Finals, a 110-106 final in that game. And wild action in last night's NHL playoffs. Of course, as I just stated in our quick hit headliners, the Chicago Blackhawks, they were able to even things against the Anaheim Ducks in a 3-2 win in not one overtime, not two overtimes, but three overtimes. Triple OT, folks. Isaac, I tried desperately to stay up and watch that when I was following it, but I dozed off like in the second overtime and woke up in the morning to that final. But man, has it been one exciting time for the NBA and the NHL playoffs? It's been fun to watch in both realms.
It has been. And I'll tell you, not watching it last night killed me, but I'm watching the highlights now, and I actually had a couple of phone conversations going with both my brother and my dad, mm-hmm. and they were giving me play-by-play, so I can intelligently talk about the NBA game at least. And I've got some highlights going of each in the background right now, so I'll do my best.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you what, looking at last night's game, no, Isaac, I will say that, I tell you what, the Golden State Warriors are just too good. I must say that. And now when looking at this series and looking at the Houston Rockets and seeing as though Dwight Howard, you know, is questionable now as the series moves on. I think he had, I think it was a thigh strain, I think it was?
It was some type of right knee injury.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Josh Smith slid under him.
Exactly.
I didn't catch that part.
And I saw that, you know, I saw that live where Josh Smith goes up, he throws up a wild, wild shot. And, yeah, you know, Josh Smith comes down, he tumbles down and hits, you know, Dwight Howard right in the knee. And he hopes to play in game two. It really didn't look to be that serious when it occurred. But again, you just never know. You never know, especially when dealing with, you know, something as sensitive as a knee injury. And, you know, I'm one of the guys who said yesterday that if Houston is able to work the ball inside to Dwight Howard and get him going throughout this series, then Houston has a chance in this series. At the end of the day, I don't think that Houston is going to win this series. But when you have a healthy Dwight Howard, who has been absolutely stellar throughout the playoffs thus far, he could be a big factor. And I tell you what, before he got injured last night, Isaac, he was giving Andrew Bogut and that interior of the Golden State Warriors the blues. And the Houston Rockets actually had about a 20-point lead in that first half. And then all of a sudden, you saw the Warriors just get hot. Steph Curry did what Steph Curry does. Klay Thompson started to do his thing. I mean, it was just really an absolute just, you know, it was unbelievable just to see how the tides just turned around so quickly. Literally in the span of about 5 minutes, Golden State was able to get back in that game and salvage all of the momentum. James Harden, though, he put on a show. I mean, he is so it's just so impressive to watch James Harden out there on the hardwood. Again, of course, it was a two-man horse race, in my opinion, when it came to, well, it was really a three-man horse race, but really when it came down to the nitty-gritty, seeing as though the Oklahoma City Thunder didn't make the playoffs, it was really a race between James Harden and Steph Curry for that MVP, even though Russell Westbrook was absolutely stellar. We had to see Russ actually on the podium for the NBA draft lottery representing the Oklahoma City Thunder. But besides that, I mean, Harden and Steph Curry, they are so good, though, Isaac. I mean, watching those two play, it is so fun. Just one, looking at Steph Curry, because Steph Curry does not have the body of a normal, dominant NBA player. You know, he's not that big. He's not that muscular. You know, when you look at him, you know, he's kind of frail. He's always been that way, though. And, you know, thank goodness for that growth spurt that he had, though, as he matured in life. But, my goodness, and to see this kid go out there, a guy that physically isn't intimidating whatsoever, but to go out there and to see him handle the ball like he does, and again, he shoots the blood out of the basketball. I mean, it is unbelievable. Again, I still stand by my words when I say that when his career is said and done, he will go down as the greatest shooter to ever pick up a basketball. And there was one three-pointer in the clutch moments of the second half where I forget what defender was right in his face, but he throws it up, and he falls down, nothing but the bottom of the net. Only Steph Curry could hit that shot. But then on the contrary, looking at James Harden, who is just a dynamic player in his own respect as well. I mean, James Harden has really, I think, Isaac, patented that step back. I mean, that dribble drive, crossover step back, in your face. It doesn't matter how many hands are in his face when he shoots that basketball. He can drill it with any of them in his face. He is really patenting that move. And also, I think he's become really a dynamic player when it comes to getting his teammates involved as well. He was kind of forced to do that last night because once James Harden started to get hot, the Golden State Warriors honed in on him. They double-teamed him a lot. His teammates really just couldn't help him out last night. But I tell you what, it is a joy to watch James Harden and Steph Curry go at it. And this is going to be a fun series to watch, a series that, again, I would have much rather have seen the L.A. Clippers go at it because of the hate and the feud that they have with each other and, the different type of personalities in that series. But, hey, this series nonetheless is also going to be a very entertaining one, I think, Isaac.
Oh, it definitely will. And when you talk about James Harden and Steph Curry, and then you throw Klay Thompson in there, these guys can light it up better than anybody else in the NBA. And what we've seen in so far, evidenced by this playoffs, is that when teams give up huge leads like the Rockets did last night, they struggle to recover from that. We saw that with the Pelicans and the Warriors. Then we saw that with, of course, the Clippers and the Rockets. So when the Rockets gave up that lead, like, maybe it's too early to talk about a momentum shift in a series, but that is huge, especially with Howard's injury, because even if he's able to play, if he's not playing 100%, the Rockets lose that post advantage that will force the Warriors to go a little bit small and limit their transition buckets, which is why Memphis had a little bit of success. So if the Rockets lose that size in Howard, I think they could really struggle throughout this series, because then Golden State can just play small, shoot, and not have to worry about defensive implications of that.
You know, I definitely agree. It certainly does not help Houston that Dwight Howard is out, and I think it makes the stronger case now that Golden State is eventually going to win this series. So who do you got? I don't think we gave a prediction yesterday when it comes to the Golden State and Houston Rockets series. Isaac, who are you going with and in how many games?
I went with the Warriors in 5 games, actually.
Gotcha. So you think Houston is only going to win one then?
I think this is the best team we've seen in the NBA for a long time. Maybe since actually, I see a lot of parallels between these teams. The 06-05 Mavericks. Mm-hmm. No, 07 Mavericks. When they went 67-15, the same record as the Warriors. The only difference is that team lost in the first round to the Warriors.
Right.
Well, this Warriors team seems to have ice in its veins, and it's hard to beat a team if you can't stop them from shooting well. And the Warriors are going to outshoot you at least 2/4 of the game. And when they get hot, man, they are cooking.
Yeah, and the thing about the Warriors is it's so impressive. Even going back farther than, our millennium here in the 2000s, going back to the 90s, I mean, this team has been compared to even Michael Jordan's Bulls of the 90s when you look at their plus win percentage, win margin, I should say, over the course of a season. I mean, it's up there with the Bulls. And if you look at the way they affect the game, not only on the offensive end, but I think that the Warriors are also a very underrated defensive team as well. They're among the league leaders when it comes to defensive efficiency as well. So, yeah, I'm going with the Warriors in 6 games tonight. Of course, we get to see the King hit the hardwood. Cleveland Cavaliers take on the Atlanta Hawks. Do not sleep on the Atlanta Hawks, folks. I think Cleveland will eventually win that series, but I'm saying it goes to 7 games, Isaac.
I think the exact same thing. You and I, like I said yesterday, we're reading from the same notes.
I'm telling you, brother.
Yeah, 7 games. The Hawks and Cavs are just a great matchup because the Hawks play such team offense and team defense.
Right.
Well, the Cavs really do have more of an ISO system. You'll see LeBron drive, Kyrie, crossover, create his own shot. And now with Kevin Love out, really Iman Shumpert becomes the third option.
Exactly.
But the Hawks will be able to just spread the floor so well. I think Al Horford's ability to step out and create opportunities for both himself and others off the dribble will really negate the effect of Timofey Mozgov, and it'll create some great opportunities for Paul Millsap.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, looking at Al Horford, I think he's one of the most underrated players in the NBA. And again, we talked about how the Hawks as a team are so underrated because the Hawks haven't been good. I mean, dating back to the days of what Dominique Wilkins. So this team is just fantastic. And I think it's going to be an entertaining series to watch.
Definitely. And the other thing that I'd bring up is LeBron James has been notorious for fading sometimes in playoff games.
Right, right.
But whenever it comes to game 6 or 7, he usually steps his game up to carry his team over the hill. So that's what I expect to see. I expect to see a series where it's really back and forth. And then in game 7, LeBron has one of those 45-point games that he had when he was younger with the Cavaliers against the Pistons.
Exactly. Yeah, taking it back right there, brother. Folks, our phone lines are open again. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Of course, before we get to, of course, Caleb Swanigan heading to Purdue, of course, former Michigan State commit. We'll throughout this hour, we'll be discussing and giving you any updates on whether or not Mike Babcock has made a decision to return as the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings or take his talents and abilities somewhere else. Since we're on the NBA, let's brief thoughts on what took place in the draft lottery last night. Isaac, of course, this is how it's stacked. Minnesota Timberwolves, they get the number one pick, followed by the Los Angeles Lakers. Philadelphia 76ers get the third. And number four, the New York Knicks. And five, the Orlando Magic. Other than those top five picks, Isaac, I mean, if you look at everything, kind of just really fell into place as many predicted. I mean, you and I said yesterday that the Detroit Pistons would have the eighth pick in this year's NBA draft, and that's exactly what took place. So really nothing really surprising to me other than the New York Knicks. I thought that, if anything, I was really rooting for the New York Knicks to possibly get one of those three top picks. And you kind of got a feel just for, because, you know, Phil Jackson, you know, on Twitter was vying all week, you know, we're going to get one of those top three picks. This is the year. And it just did not fall in their pocket. And just imagine, I mean, I think this team, more so than any other team in the NBA, because I think the Minnesota Timberwolves, especially with them getting a number one pick, I think you can pretty much pencil them in next year's NBA playoffs because they have a solid team, Isaac, that's very impressive. I mean, and a very young squad as well. They just need a coach to hone that ability. I think Flip Saunders is still over there, right?
He is.
Yeah, and I think Flip is going to do a great job with that team next year. But the New York Knicks, a team that has so much expectation surrounded around that squad. If you play for the New York Knicks, you are expected to win. Now, that's kind of ironic. They kind of remind me of my Dallas Cowboys because the Dallas Cowboys haven't won anything since the 1990s, okay? It's been a long, 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 long time. But there is such rich history and rich aura surrounded around that franchise. Many people look at New York as the mecca of basketball, the founding city of basketball here in America. And you got a feel for this squad because I think the basketball is more entertaining and healthier when teams like the New York Knicks and the Los Angeles Lakers, the big dogs in the NBA, Boston Celtics, with those rich traditions, when they are good, the NBA is just at a better state, I guess you can say. So I was really rooting for the New York Knicks to get a top three pick in this year's draft. I'm kind of disappointed in that.
Well, I'm excited to see the Timberwolves, though, because although the Knicks' deflation of that, you know, our initial elation of being able to possibly get a Jahlil Okafor, Karl Anthony Towns, who could potentially turn that franchise around and lead it into a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
Then that changes into a fourth pick, which they're most likely to change. And you could just hear it in the draft room, or I guess the lottery room, just all these sighs of defeat from New York fans. It was really hard to believe. But the Timberwolves, I think it's too early to pencil them in for the playoffs for next year. But if this team, and I just worry about them being such a small market in Minnesota, but I think that team has as much talent in the future as anybody. You look at Andrew Wiggins. Is
right.
Such a great prospect.
I mean, Ricky Rubio. You know, you got Adrian Payne over there, former Spartan, Kevin Martin, Shabazz Muhammad. I think this team, Nikola Pekovic, he's another guy.
Gorgie Jang, too, out of Louisville.
Right, exactly.
Outstanding.
Right, right.
So I think this team in a few years could really make a run at the West if they can keep those components.
Now, looking at the Detroit Pistons, of course, they will have the 8th pick in this year's draft. And you know what? We did not mention a player that I really think, if he's available, the Pistons should snab at number 8. And I can't believe I didn't bring him up. I got a chance to watch him in person, of course, this year with the numerous times that Wisconsin played Michigan State. He's the National Player of the Year. He was unbelievable in the Big Ten Championship game. He's such a dynamic player, one of the best college players I've ever covered. Frank Kaminsky. Frank Kaminsky's fantastic. I talked about yesterday that kind of stretch big guy that the Pistons need or could bode well for this team. But Frank Kaminsky is a guy who can shoot the heck out of the ball from behind the arc or anywhere on the floor for that matter, and can also, he's so polished. This thing that impressed me about Frank Kaminsky when he was in college, he was so polished fundamentally in the game of basketball down low. He could hit you with so many moves. He could go left, right, off the glass. I think if he's available, I think the Pistons should go after Frank Kaminsky, Isaac.
Al, I would agree with you, but there's a big man standing in between the Pistons and Kaminsky, and that's Andre Drummond. They play the same position.
But think about Andre can't shoot, though.
Andre can't shoot.
Just imagine if Greg Monroe, if they don't get Greg Monroe, if he doesn't re-sign with the Pistons next year, just imagine if Frank Kaminsky comes on board, and now you have two, ideally twin towers down there still, in Frank Kaminsky and Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond, a guy who can affect the game right in the post. Frank Kaminsky can do that as well, but it allows Kaminsky to also play with affecting the game down low and on the outside. I like it.
I think it would be too dangerous defensively. I think that would be disaster waiting to happen because Kaminsky's speed would be just ready to be exploited by a faster power forward. Like from my New Orleans Pelicans, imagine Anthony Davis going up against Frank Kaminsky.
Well, but still, I mean, that's kind of like the creme de la creme being compared to because anybody that Anthony Davis goes against, he's just a matchup nightmare. It doesn't matter who he's going against on any given night.
Well,
but for the majority of the league, I mean, you don't have too many prolific big men in the NBA. So I think if one is there, like a Frank Kaminsky, I think you got to go after it.
Al, you know what I've thought about this 8th pick, and I've been hitching this bandwagon.
Stanley Johnson, huh? You're singing his praises, huh?
Stanley Johnson. The guy has tons of potential. He's a long, lanky, small forward who can shoot it fairly well. He shot it around 34-36%, mm-hmm. which has worked to be improved on. But he's got a good stroke. I think the kid has tons of potential at a position of needs for the Pistons. I think even if it requires them to trade up, I think Stanley Johnson's worth going after.
I hear you. And, you know, I'm looking at the reports on Stanley. I mean, his name has been thrown around a lot. And I'm looking at different comparisons. A lot of people have been comparing Stanley to a player like a Ron Artest, that type of a player. Is this game comparable from what you've seen to Ron Artest?
I think Stanley provides a little bit more of that athletic jump that, you know, kind of jolt to a team that can really energize it. I think he'll be making plays throughout. I think at his best, he could maybe become a bit of a Tayshaun Prince with a little bit more of a driving game because Stanley's got a decent-looking shot that he can improve on. But I think his defensive impact, and his defense was subject to criticism in college.
And I think talking about defense for a sec, I think that you hear that a lot with players who come from the college game to the NBA, that they need to work on their defense. Because, I mean, it can be a bit of a shock going from college to the pros where the game is so much more athletic. It's so much faster. A lot of people struggle with that. I remember Nick Stauskas, he actually bit back at the public when he was drafted. I think last year's NBA draft? And when he was drafted, I mean, there was a lot of people out there criticizing Nick Stauskas and his defensive game. And you hear that with countless players, you know, coming from college to the NBA. So I think that will just come with time, and I think every rookie is going to have to deal with that hurdle.
I agree 100%. I think Stanley Johnson has the physical attributes to compensate for any defensive inadequacies he does have. I think he can get fast break blocks. I think the kids... I just love the guy.
I think you may be Stanley Johnson's agent here, Isaac. I think you may be getting paid from the brother. I don't know.
I might try to get him to send me over a jersey for spurring all this public press for him.
I'm telling you, man. You are a big ass. Well, again, other names. Again, I think that the Pistons, if he's there, I would love it if they drafted Frank Kaminsky. I like Miles Turner out of Texas. He's also a power forward slash center type of a player. Devin Booker is a name that's been thrown out there. Shooting guard from, of course, Kentucky. But again, I don't think the Pistons need another guard, if you ask me. But his name has been thrown around. Even Willie Cauley-Stein from Kentucky as well. Even how about Sam Decker, small forward out of Wisconsin? I don't know. But at the end of the day, I think if he's there, if he's available, I hope that the Pistons draft Frank Kaminsky. I think he will be a good fit.
All right.
We'll see, though.
Disagree.
We'll see. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, we will be chatting with a Michigan State gridiron great. That's right, former Michigan State wide receiver who played for the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos, also a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. Gene Washington joins me in just a sec. You don't want to miss that chat and so much more. Keep it locked right here. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes today in actually less than 2 hours now. Of course, during the spring and summer months here at WKAR, we move up our Current Sports TV production time from 6 p.m. to 3 p.m. So today I actually had the privilege of sitting down with a man who is making the dreams of, I guess you can say, college students out there who may have played high school sports back in the day, didn't have that opportunity to do that at the Division I level, but came here for their academics, but still have that itch. Still have that itch to say, oh, man, I still wish I could go back in time and play, you know, football like I did back in high school. Well, this man is actually giving students of Michigan State University that opportunity. Al Manfroni is the head coach of the Michigan State club football team, and it's fantastic. They actually held a combine. They held tryouts. The team has been put together, and Al Manfroni, he has one incredible coaching background, so he'll be bringing that expertise to the average Joe student who wants to give their try at football once again. So Al will join me on this week's Current Sports TV. Again, if you can't join me and to be a part of that live studio audience today at 3 o'clock, all you got to do is simply get your popcorn ready, sit down on that comfy couch, and turn on Current Sports TV tomorrow night at 10 p.m. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He was a three-year starter for Michigan State back in 1964 to 1966 and helped Michigan State to a combined record of 23-6-1 during his career, including back-to-back Big Ten and national championships in 1965 to 66. Now, during that three-year span, the Spartans posted a 17-3 record in Big Ten games. Now, he was a first-time, first-team All-American and two-time first-team All-Big Ten selection. He led the team in receptions for three straight years and also even ran track here at Michigan State. Now, him and his daughter, Maya, have collaborated to put together Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. This film is not just a football film, but a story about the history and changing face of college football. It's the story of young black athletes recruited from the South at the peak of segregation to play for Michigan State. It is my honor to welcome Gene Washington to WKAR's Current Sports. How you doing, Gene?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for joining me today. Now, first off, Gene, you actually were in town this past weekend with your daughter, Maya. And we had Maya actually on Friday to talk about this phenomenal project, which we'll get to in just a sec. But first off, how was it being back in the friendly confines of East Lansing?
Well, it's always fun for me to be back on campus, and it was I had a great time. The track team did very well, especially the women's team, and the Big Ten championship. This was really the first time that I've had an opportunity to attend a Big Ten championship. The last time I competed in the Big Ten championship, so it was a lot of fun, and I got a chance to meet a lot of my teammates because it was a reunion type situation. We won the Big Ten championships about 50 years ago, mm-hmm. and all of the members of that track team, my teammates, most of them were able to come back, and we just had a great time meeting and greeting each other again.
You know, Gene, that is so remarkable because when you look at your time here at Michigan State, it's very rare nowadays to find a football player who was a dual sport athlete and competed also in track and field. How was it, you know, if you could, you know, rewind the time and think back to that period when you were competing both in football and track and field, how was it balancing those two sports during your time here?
It was very challenging, and of course, back in those days, we did not have a semester system. It was a quarter system. Every 10 weeks, you would have your final. So in the fall, of course, I played football, and then in the winter time, we played I ran track, indoor track, mm-hmm. and then springtime was outdoor track. And every summer, I took some classes and did my summer work. And it was very challenging, but I was very, very glad that I had an opportunity to do that. And then after 4 years of doing that, I was able to finish my degree and graduate in that four-year time period.
Wow, what a moment. I tell you what, that's fantastic stuff. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Gene Washington, former Michigan State wide receiver, who also ran track here at Michigan State and played for the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos. Now, Gene, I want to dive into this project that I find to be so intriguing. Again, entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. Again, it's a collaboration with you and your daughter, Maya. How did this idea to put together this project come about?
Well, it was really Maya's idea because she didn't know a lot about my background, and she has over the years, especially meeting Bubba and got to know Bubba, and George Webster. When Bubba passed away, she was able to spend more time talking about that particular situation, and so she wanted to hear more about our background. And of course, I came from the Houston, Texas area. Bubba was from Beaumont, Texas, and I was from La Porte, Texas. And so we played in this segregated situation down in Texas. And Bubba's father was also very involved in sports and football. He was a head football coach at his high school, mm-hmm. Very close to Duffy Doherty. Duffy Doherty was putting on coaching clinics in the Houston area for all high school coaches. And in particular, he did these coaching clinics for all of the black coaches down in that particular area. The black coaches, because of segregation, could not attend coaching clinics which were integrated. And so Duffy would come down at least two or three times a year. And so he had a lot of friendship with a lot of black coaches and all of the particular black high schools in the Houston area, in the Texas area, because of the segregation. So that's how I was able to be known, because Duffy's because Coach Smith, Willie Ray Smith, and Bubba recommended me to Duffy and said that I should be added to the freshman class, because Bubba was definitely going to Michigan State. See.
Right, right. And you know what? Looking back at that moment, because, you know, of course, Bubba being a big advocate for you, saying, hey, you got to check out this other guy. I mean, Gene Washington, he's pretty good. When you found out that Bubba was a big advocate for you and really the big reason why you were recruited by Duffy, I mean, I got to ask, what's the first thing you said to Bubba?
No, it was quite surprising, because it was in a telephone conversation that we had, because we played football against each other and also basketball. And in one in a telephone conversation, and also in one of the track meets that I participated in, we talked a little bit, and he said that he was definitely going to Michigan State. However, he really wanted to go to Texas, but he could not do that because of segregation.
Right.
And so I had no knowledge of Michigan State, where it was, but surely I trusted Bubba and his father. because we were all real good friends and we were all competing against each other. So it was a great opportunity, and I'm so glad that that he did put a good word in for me.
Now, Gene, of course, the it's well documented throughout history just how the times of the 60s were in the South when it came to race relations between African Americans and Caucasians. Now, when you came from the South to play for Michigan State University for Duffy Daugherty, I got to ask, I mean, what was that moment like for you? And were there any times on campus here at Michigan State where you encountered any sort of racism? I'm curious.
No, I would say that leaving the Texas situation, we, because of the segregation, we were really removed from having any interaction whatsoever with white people, say.
Mm-hmm.
And so leaving that particular situation and then going to Michigan State, it was a very welcoming situation. And so, all of a sudden, you realize that, for example, my two roommates were white, and Ed Glick, he was a swimmer, and Gary Dilley was a swimmer, and they both were very, very successful. And so we still communicate. We know each other. We still talk to each other. But clearly making that transition from a completely segregated situation, it wasn't any problem whatsoever because Duffy did all of the recruiting. He recruited all across the country, and I would say that it was a family, more of a family situation because George Webster, he came from Anderson, South Carolina, and then there was Thornhill, who came from West Roanoke, West Virginia,
right?
And that was Ernie Pasteur. So we had a lot of guys from all different parts of the country, and it was such a nice family atmosphere. And the word in terms of segregation, and we did recognize that there was a lot of concerns at that time that was happening in the South. But you also have to recall we did not have this instant media. Television, an instant to know that things was really happening in the South as bad as it was, if you will.
Right. So you guys being up here in the North, I mean, you didn't know how bad it was down there then, huh?
That's correct, because you just didn't. It wasn't on TV. It wasn't on radio all the time. And then, of course, we basically were very concerned about our studies and making sure we kept our grades up so that we can keep our eligibility, see. But we were aware that things was happening. I recall that Dr. Martin Luther King spoke on campus just before that march on Selma, about a month before then.
Wow, did he? Here at Michigan State?
Yeah, at Michigan State. So
wow.
I remember that. And however, it wasn't one of those big issues because it wasn't in the news as much as it would have been if we had the same type of communications and media.
Right.
We have today.
Exactly. Wow, what a remarkable moment. Again, folks, we are chatting with Michigan State wide receiver, great, again, who played for the Minnesota Vikings and the Denver Broncos throughout his career, Gene Washington. Now, Gene, going back to this project, again, we had Maya on, and you just kind of alluded to it a moment ago, how Maya, when she was putting together this project, she didn't know much about your playing career, and she shared with me on the air last week that when she started to dive into it and talk to you and to talk to some of your former teammates on just how exactly good you were, her jaw was on the floor. I mean, her eyes were wide open. But when you guys put together this project, do you think, when talking with your daughter and sitting down with her and having these different discussions, do you think that this project brought you all closer together?
Oh, yes, of course it did, because I have three daughters, and Maya is one of my three daughters. And, of course, in terms of sports, spending time with them talking about sports, they were interested. Maya was interested, but there was a lot of things I didn't share in terms of, running pass patterns or running the hurdles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in things that we did socially together, it was the other people who would acknowge that I was a pretty good athlete. And so they would share things to her that I never told her about. And so that sparked her interest because, of course, she knows that I went to Michigan State, but in the meantime, she hadn't had a chance to really meet the Michigan State family and meet a lot of the coaches and a lot of my teammates because a lot of that was before she was born, see.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, in talking about the Michigan State family, of course, Trey Wayans, former corner for Michigan State now, is taking his talents to the Minnesota Vikings, drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. Maya also shared that, of course, the Minnesota Vikings is the team you used to play for back in the NFL, and that you guys had a small chat and dinner with Trey upon hearing the news that he was drafted to the Vikings. What was that talk like, and what sort of advice did you give to Trey?
Well, it was a very nice seeing him. We had a chance. They had the rookie camp. They brought in all of their rookies that weekend, and on a particular Saturday morning, we got a chance to the training camp. The Vikings facility is not too far from where we live. We live in Plymouth, and their training facility is in Eden Prairie, so we were very close by.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to go over and have lunch. Maya and I, we had lunch with Trey, and he seemed to be very, very excited and delighted that he was drafted. And of course, the Vikings. We were in need of defensive backs, and Coach Zimmer, the head football coach, was very impressed. The whole organization was very impressed with Trey and followed his career. And one of the things that is interesting, that he's from the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And his family, it's about a six-hour drive. His hometown is about a six-hour drive from Minneapolis, the Minneapolis area. So that's really great because his family will be able to see just about all of his games here, the Viking games, and I'm sure that they were able to see most of the games when he played with the Spartans. But he seemed to be very excited. He was looking for a place to live, and so we provided some pointers. But it was just great to have him up here, and it speaks volumes to the defense that we've had over the years at the whole program that Coach D has put together because it's very unusual that you have a lot of your defensive players as outstanding as some of the players we've had on defense.
Right.
And they're all going in the first round, if you will. But it's great that he's here. And I made a point to tell Coach Zimmer and Rick Spielman, the people up here, that it's nice of them to not forget the Spartans because it's been about 48 years before they've had a first round draft pick. See, and
right, right.
So I had to kind of remind them, just don't forget about the Spartans.
There you go. There you're doing your due diligence there, Gene. And it's got to be pretty cool that again he's donning the jersey, that purple jersey that you once wore back when you were a pro in the NFL.
Oh, yes, and he's wearing Clint Jones' number. That's number 26 is the same number that Clinton Jones wore.
Wow.
And of course, Clinton he'll be inducted to the Hall of Fame this year. And we told Trey that he wasn't aware of that.
So it just happened to be a coincidence, huh?
Yeah.
Gotta love that. All right, Gene, before I get you out of here, this is kind of a great segue out of our second break into our next discussion point here on the show. I want to just briefly get your thoughts, seeing as though you played in the NFL. I want to get your thoughts on this whole Deflategate situation that is happening with the New England Patriots. Of course, with Tom Brady, the quarterback of the team, you know, it was found that, of course, you know the story, that it was found that many of the footballs were underinflated during that AFC Championship game against the Indianapolis Colts. Do you think this story is being blown out of proportion, or should the NFL and fans of the product of the NFL have a legitimate gripe about the situation?
My gut feeling is I think it's kind of blown out of proportion. Although there is rules about the inflation of the football, but on the other hand, it's my understanding that the lineman, there's a special official that has the ball in his hands and he sets the ball down before every play.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that is a major concern, I guess they should really have some kind of a gauge to make sure that it's inflated the proper way, because I just don't. It's just very surprising. Apparently, the National Football League, they must have a lot of evidence to to fine Brady for four games, to suspend him for four games, and also to fine the club $1 million, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I think it's much to do about nothing, if you will. But in the meantime, maybe they have the proof. And I was just surprised that he would be suspended for four games.
And, you know, Gene, I always hear about, you know, there's an old saying that my grandfather used to remind me of all the time. And he used to say, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Everyone in the world of sports is, you know, the great ones, at least, are always trying to find a little advantage. You know, I'm a big Michael Jordan fan. And, you know, I always tell the story of how Mike, I remember he had a 60 Minutes interview where he told of when he would dribble down the court, sometimes he would look at where the ref was and to see where his line of sight was. And sometimes if the ref wasn't looking, he may tug the jersey of his opponent to get an upper hand on getting by him on that first step dribble. I mean, all the greats have just things they used to do just to try and get that upper hand in competition. I got to ask, Gene, during your playing days, I mean, what do you see guys do to try and gain an advantage and to tweak the rules a little bit?
Well, I just remember that you remember as a wide receiver, they used to have the stick'em.
Yeah, exactly.
And they would put this on a sock, and of course, then they would put it on the hand. So if there's a ball in the air, it would be an advantage because you have the stick'em on your hands and everything.
Exactly. Did guys use that a lot?
They outlawed that, and they stopped using that. And,
right.
And then the other thing, too, when we played wearing gloves, that was outlawed. You could not wear gloves at all.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So now these guys making these great catches and one hand and all of that.
Right.
But they have gloves on.
Exactly.
And
which
we
helps.
We never had gloves on. And, of course, here with the Vikings, we played outside in the elements, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, and plus Bud Grant, our coach at the time, He wouldn't and did not permit us to have heaters on the sideline.
Really?
Yeah. So we had no gloves, we had no heaters, and we played just in the elements, if you will. But now there's all kinds of changes have been made.
Yeah.
And then especially the glove situation come to me because that was important to me because I had to catch the football.
Exactly. I mean, you being a wide receiver and all. And speaking of the stick'em, did you ever try stick'em, Gene?
No, I never did because one of the reasons they outlawed that stick'em because it gets on the ball.
Right.
And some of the quarterbacks have trouble throwing the ball because it's so sticky.
Exactly. Wow. That's competition. I mean, there's always an athlete out there or athletes trying to gain an upper hand. I appreciate the insight, Gene. Again, remind folks out there, if they want to get more information, how can they do so concerning Through the Banks of the Red Cedar?
There's a website, and throughthebanksoftheredcedar.com. They can go to that, and the website will direct them and tell them about the story, about what we're trying to do. And I hope that most people will log on to that.
Certainly. And as I said last week, we'll make sure to promote it on our Facebook page and get information out there about it. I can't wait to view it. Again, folks, Gene Washington, former Michigan State wide receiver who also ran track here and played for the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos and is a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. Gene Washington, thanks a lot, Gene. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. How about that, Isaac? Stick'em. I wanted to bring up the stick'em as well because that was something that happened a lot back in the day, back in the NFL. How about that?
That's weird. Like, I can't
have you ever
even
heard of
think
it?
Of that. No, I
yeah.
haven't heard of it.
Yeah, if you were to YouTube stick'em right now, and if you were to go on YouTube, you would actually see footage of players who used to try that back in the day. Man, it's riveting stuff. But, you know, to close out today's show, we didn't get a chance to wrap up our thoughts on this. And I don't think, you know, while I was chatting with Gene, that there's no new developments here on concerning Mike Babcock. Has there been, Isaac?
I've not seen any.
I haven't seen any. I just went on Twitter just a second to see if I, you know, to scroll up and down to see if I saw any new news. So I don't see anything, folks. So as of right now, I guess he's still making up his mind, okay? But really quickly, on the Patriots deciding to accept their penalty again, of taking away the two draft picks, the fine of $1 million, do you think that this was the right move from Robert Kraft and his squad? What do you think, Isaac?
Definitely. because the Patriots have that reputation, that bad boy. Well, not bad boy even, just that cheater reputation.
Right.
They really do. So to accept the penalties, to accept the consequences of their actions, it's a smart move. And I still expect Tom Brady, and he will appeal, but it's a smart move from Robert Kraft. And at the end of the day, he can afford to fork over the $1 million. Like,
right.
He's got money.
Exactly. And, you know, I tell you what, it was quite surprising to me that Robert Kraft and the Patriots decided to accept the penalty, because I really thought, knowing the type of relationship that Robert Kraft and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell do have, I mean, they're good old pals. I mean, of course, we all know about the photo that was that was released on social media of Robert Kraft and Roger Goodell kind of shaking hands right before the Super Bowl, I think. And that got a lot of play. I mean, but they're really good friends. So when I heard that there was going to be a press conference yesterday at 1 o'clock, and that Robert Kraft was going to be talking to, of course, Roger Goodell, I really thought that Roger Goodell was going to take it easy on him, or the appeal was going to go through, and that, you know, the Patriots going to you know, get a lesser penalty, and they were going to get those two draft picks back. I was quite surprised, though, that Robert Kraft just manned up and said, hey, we'll take the blow. And it makes the NFL, it makes Roger Goodell, it gives him more credibility, I guess you can say, because if it would have gone down like that, there would have been chatter left and right saying, well, the reason why they got their draft picks back is because of the relationship that Kraft shares with Goodell. So I was certainly encouraged with that. Now, going back to Tom Brady, again, folks, this has nothing to do with Tom. The team is just taking a hit here. Tom Brady, I do expect him to appeal. I believe that the deadline is on Friday to do that. I expect to see that news very rather soon, rather than up to the deadline on Friday. So we'll see what happens on that. At the end of the day, though, I'm still sticking to my guns. I do think that the penalty will be reduced to 2 games. I think that Tom Brady won't get the full four games that we initially saw. What do you think, Isaac?
I agree with that 100%. And just to add on to the Patriots, I guess, strategy.
Right.
Is, I thought this was brilliant public relations, because you say they released to the media that the Patriots were going to try to have back creek negotiations with the NFL to discuss the penalties. So that makes it everybody expect, like, oh gosh, you know, it's Kraft and Goodell, and of course the sentence is going to be reduced.
Mm-hmm.
And then to say, you know what, we're just going to accept the penalties, it kind of set us all up to hate the Patriots even more. And then they're like, no, we're actually the good guys.
Yeah, we're going to take it. It makes them look good, doesn't it? From
it
a PR
does.
Standpoint. Yeah, without a doubt. All right, folks. Well, I tell you what, there's not enough time in the day, or at least in our current sports show, folks. I wanted to get, of course, and talk about Caleb Swanigan changing his commitment from Michigan State to Purdue. And, you know, we kind of threw out different variables as to why he did that, Isaac. And this quote, I think, sums it up. This quote actually comes from Roosevelt Barnes, who is listed as the guardian of Caleb Swanigan. He says, quote, "It really wasn't that tough. I think sometimes the way social media is now, that you might get pressured into making a quick decision. Just because you're 18, it doesn't mean you always make wise decisions on your own. Kids would benefit from their parents getting more involved. This was actually around the time I thought he would commit." So going back to that speculation that we had of possibly somebody being in his ear to possibly change his commitment, i.e. his parents, I think that quote speaks for itself. Folks, we are out of time. We'll continue that discussion and so much more on tomorrow's Current Sports. Thanks so much to Gene Washington for joining me on today's show. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.